to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I'm Jennifer, and together with my husband Dave, we started with an idea, worked on it as a side hustle, and grew it into our first eco-friendly store. At Upcycle Canada, we repurpose, refinish, and reuse discarded items, giving them new life. Sit in on the conversation as we continue to grow from a small side hustle into something much more. Special guests will drop by and share their journey with you as well. This is the most eco-friendly small business podcast in your favorites. This is Upcycle Canada, where yesterday's items are reborn. Let's do this.
Welcome back to the Upcycle Canada podcast. My name is Dave. Happy to be here with you. Jen's at work. And I'm excited to share with you an interview with my new hero. His name is Aaron Blanchard. He works with Earthwise Architectural Salvage, ewsalvage.com. And these amazing people salvage and reclaim and resell amazing pieces of buildings, churches, all kinds of great stuff where they will come in and salvage these great things, keeping them from the landfill and then repurposing them and getting them out back into the public. They have three retail locations and they serve their community so well. Salvage, reused, reclaimed, vintage and antique. This is from their website. It says, our retail warehouses are full of both vintage and new doors, windows, lighting, hardware, and lumber. We also offer a diverse assortment of architectural antiques, including stained glass, wrought iron, pillars, posts, and columns. Tour our Seattle, Tacoma, and Aberdeen stores and feel the history. Our salvage experts will be happy to walk you through the process, detailing what we can do for you and your project, all on a no-fee basis. ewsalvage.com. Aaron Blanchard is here. We're going to talk about a bunch of things around his business, how it all started, and where they're heading. Excited to have you here on the podcast. Thank you for your patience as we create more episodes. I've got some other great guests coming up in the future. UpcycleCanada.ca. Go there and subscribe to our podcast so you are never miss out on a single episode. And on behalf of Jen, thank you for listening to the podcast. Here we go with Aaron Blanchard, ewsalvage.com. Ready? Let's get our salvage on. Here we go. Welcome to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I have somebody who is Earthwise. They salvage, they reclaim, they have a store, they do it all. And I'm inspired to have Aaron Blanchard on with me today from ewsalvage.com. Some three store locations, not near Canada, but I got to make a trip and I'm excited to talk to Aaron. Aaron, welcome to the Upcycle Canada podcast. I am honored to have you here. Welcome, welcome.
Dave, thanks so much for having me on today. It's a privilege to be here.
So our community, as we talked about before hitting record, is quite small in some areas. And anytime that I can connect with somebody in this space in salvage and repurposing, I'm just in awe. So I feel like we're baby steps into this. You guys are doing such great things to have you on and to share the story of how you started. I'm inspired already in our conversations, and I'm hoping to do the same with our audience. Can you tell us a little bit about where you guys are located in the world and maybe some of the beginning of the origin story of EW Salvage and how you kind of got here?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we are kind of in the greater Seattle area. In 1991, was when we were founded. And then I think in 2012, we opened up our Tacoma location. That's just about 30 minutes south of Seattle. And then in 2017, we opened up our Aberdeen location, which is a little bit further, kind of headed out to the coast. But it's actually at one point was the lumber capital of the world. So we've been really focusing on a lot of lumber products from that area. It really goes back to the owner and founder, Kurt Petrauskas. He's my boss and my mentor and my business partner. And he started off, he was building custom homes. He was a single dad at the time. He was just kind of getting by. And then he got a hold of some projects that were more kind of in the deconstruction vein. And so he was, you know, essentially he was finding projects that were really complicated to get big machinery to, you know, something on a big hillside or something without good road access or something like that, where it was really necessary. And he could kind of outbid the demo contractors by doing hand deconstruction. So that means actually by hand taking a house apart, which is a very grueling task. And as he was doing that, he was just kind of realizing how cool all this stuff is. And he's, you know, ended up starting to take stuff and set it aside. You know, all the doors and windows was easy enough, but he was to the point where he was, you know, spending his evenings denailing 2x4s and kind of just, you know, started to fill his garage up with stuff to the point where that, you know, was filled up pretty quick, and he started to run out of room. His yard became full of materials, and then eventually he rented a parking lot. Actually, this is a guy who really he always finds a way to get stuff done, and is very creative in how he does it. He hired a guy who I think at the time was experiencing homelessness right in his area as his first employee. They kind of just set up some lean-tos in this parking lot and started selling building materials, and then flash forward a few years, they ended up getting a location in the Soto district of Seattle. It's kind of the industrial area where we have these materials available to people. It was kind of at the beginning, it was kind of more of a garage sale, open on the weekends. You would be doing deconstruction during the week and then selling building materials on the weekends. Didn't really have a lot of time to sleep. And then as things started to pick up, people started to see how interesting this is. The quality of the materials he was removing relative to the quality of materials you can buy at a box store now. Mm-hmm. People really liked it. And he kind of said, hey, man, I've got something here. So he started Earthwise and started just filling up warehouses full of this stuff. Got crews that are just dedicated to salvage, kind of moved out of the home building and home deconstruction world, and just devoted this whole company just to salvaging buildings before they get torn down or in the middle of a remodel.
And diverting all this great material from the landfill, right? Like dumpsters and dumpsters of stuff just going and being tossed in the landfill. This is amazing that we're able to reclaim this and then repurpose it. And you talked, when we did like a pre-interview chat, you gave me some great examples of some buildings where there was like extreme water damage, and they were able to take off like the rafters and everything and pull the joists and rafters out and save this quality wood that's been around for so long that I think you said something around the lines of urban forestry. Was that correct?
Yeah. So that's kind of a term I picked up from someone else in the business that is heavily in the deconstruction world. Jim Barger, he's a bit of a legend in the area. And he came up with that term. Basically it's the idea that, you know, the first wave of forestry was actually removing, you know, trees and cutting down the forest. And now we're in, you know, now that we don't really have a lot of old growth forest left, we're in the next phase, which is, you know, I would say it's not like they cut down these trees and use them for firewood. They built buildings out of them. Mm-hmm. And so the next phase of reclaiming of getting this material is to reclaim it from buildings. Kind of standard operating procedure is to just crunch up a building with a big excavator, get it into as small of pieces as you can, get it packed into as few dumpsters as you can, because you pay by weight and you pay by number of dumpsters, and then just get it offsite and away. But a lot of that material is just stuff you can't find anymore. So that's kind of where salvage comes in. It's interrupting that waste stream, hopefully long before the excavator gets involved in finding ways to redirect those materials. I think the one you were thinking of that I was talking about before was one of our probably still our biggest project in Aberdeen, because Aberdeen was the lumber capital of the world, and their armory had a fire. So it's a lot of interesting history for Aberdeen. Actually, if you know the band Nirvana, Kurt Cobain came from Aberdeen. And so it's like, you know, as you're coming into Aberdeen, there's like a come as you are. One of his song lyrics is like a big sign coming in. Anyways, in the armory, because, you know, we don't really use armories for armories anymore, they had a Kurt Cobain museum, and I think that's actually where a fire had started. I'm not sure the cause of it. I think it was some kind of a mechanical, electrical fire or something like that. And so they, you know, it was a pretty bad fire. And so this really cool historic building, basically, you know, it was burned out pretty thoroughly. And they ended up removing the whole roof from it. It was kind of just so they could operate in there without worrying about the roof falling in on them. And then, you know, permitting and all this stuff. So basically this building sat for a really long time without a roof, and we're in the Pacific Northwest, so it rains a lot. Yeah. And it was this really interesting, you never would expect this kind of, you know, it just worked out really well, where all this rain actually it was long enough time to soften up the wood a little bit, but certainly not long enough for any rot to occur. And so we teamed up with the demo contractor. And as they were starting to demolish the floors, they were just pulling up all these floor joists, these like old rough sawn, you know, ancient boards. I think they were like 3x14-inch boards, just big, massive 20-foot long joists. And as they were pulling them up, the nails were just sliding out of them because the water was kind of working. And so like, it's, you know, a bit into the weeds here, but denailing is a huge pain in the butt when it comes to salvaging materials. So it basically, this whole building just denailed itself as we were removing it. And then underneath those joists, though, we're holding it up because, you know, this was an armory. It was meant to have, you know, tanks rolling around on this giant floor. They had these enormous beams. I think we got close to 50 of these. They were basically like 1 foot by 2 foot, 20 foot long beams, just this, you know, from the lumber capital of the world. You know, the armory in that city is about the best lumber, you know, as far as Douglas fir goes, that you can find. And we reclaimed every stick of it. And then we take it to our mill in Tacoma. Actually, for this one, we ended up, it's a mobile mill. So we brought it down to Aberdeen because there was just so much material. And we just started milling countertops and, you know, tabletops and shelving and just all this beautiful material that you really couldn't find in lumber stores today, because it's just really old growth stuff that they're not logging. Those forests are mostly gone now, so that's the urban forestry is saving those kind of things.
So, like, you have an idea of how old that building was?
I believe it was in 1920s. I want to say 22 or 25.
Okay. And so, like, I had somebody come on and they were working on a house from the 1850s, and they're saying, you know, the wood here in the house is from the 1850s. And I'm like, well, if you think about it, that was a tree before it was a house. So how old was the tree before it was cut down to become the house in the 1850s? And they're like, yeah, that's right. Actually, it is older than that. So you're dealing with wood that's been around for a long time, right? And I love that you're being able to turn this into something completely different, a tabletop, whatever, shelving. That's quite unique. Do you have any other stories about other buildings, unique places you guys have been, and some unique things that you've been able to uncover in the process of salvage?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, lumber is a big part of what we do, but one of our strengths is just diversity. We do a lot of, we do a lot of other materials as well. So, one that comes to mind is churches. We do a lot of churches. Churches are kind of unique in the sense that they are, they're, you know, usually right in the heart of a big city. They're the most, you know, that's where they built churches, especially before, you know, the rapid growth we've seen, at least in this area. They occupy like the best real estate, and they're also some of the oldest buildings that a lot of times, you know, haven't had the repairs needed over the years. We worry a lot in this area about like seismic retrofitting, which, you know, people don't like to see old churches torn down, but a lot of times it's kind of the amount of money it would take to, you know, basically build a metal frame inside of an old brick building to make it set up to handle it. It's just astronomically cost ineffective, especially if there's not as many people going to that church anymore. So we've done a lot of really big churches. One of the most interesting ones, though, is one where we, this is something I never knew. This is one of these things that Kurt tells me because he's just been in this business for so long. I guess it's really common in a lot of institutional buildings to have, they always have a cornerstone, which typically is like a granite chunk, you know, and it's got the date and, you know, kind of when it was built. But a lot of times behind that is a time capsule. And every other church I've done, we've had been dealing directly with the church, and they always kind of, you know, they get the demo contractors to pull out the time capsule. We never really hear about it. But this was an interesting one up in the Queen Anne area of Seattle, where it had been sold to a business, and then the business sold it to a developer. And so there was just no real chain of custody for this thing. And we're, you know, we're days away from an excavator coming in and demolishing this place. I'm like, all right, we're going to get that time capsule out because, you know, that would seem a shame. You know, after we got all the stained glass out and we got pulled all the floorboards and we'd already been there for several weeks, we just realized like, no one's coming to take this. So we're going to make sure that this thing gets saved. And so we spent, you know, good 2 hours with little roto hammers. It's like a little mini jackhammer, removing the cornerstone, which is in our shop now. It's a really, really awesome chunk of granite. I believe that building was 1906.
Wow.
And sure enough, we pull it out, and right behind it, you can see the kind of the corroded copper box behind it. So we, you know, a bunch more demo work, got that all the way out, and tried to clean our hands off as best as we could. You can actually see we've got a TikTok video. Actually, I think it's on all of our social media of us actually uncovering and opening it up. I thought that would have been, that was an important thing to get on camera, you know, us actually discovering it. So yeah, we pulled it out and, you know, it's not like they filled these things with gold bullion or anything. It was just, you know, papers from the time, a few of newspapers from the day that they had put everything away, and little ledgers of people who had donated to the church. And it was just a really interesting little piece of history. And then we're kind of in this weird situation. It's like, this is like a, this is an incredibly cool piece of history. You know, it doesn't really hold any monetary value. We just had to find someone who could, you know, properly display this and give it a home where it, you know, would be seen by people who are, you know, hopefully have some connection to this church. So we ended up, Wesley Holmes is a retirement community that is Methodist, and it was a Methodist church. We connected with them, and they ended up getting a lot of the stained glass from that building too, because they happened to be building a chapel at the time. So they picked up a whole bunch of stained glass, and they also took the, we just gave them the time capsule and said, hey, if you guys could display this somewhere where it, you know, could have some eyes on it, people can appreciate it, we would love to just donate this to you guys so that it can be displayed and for people to see, you know, for another 100 years. So nice. That was kind of an interesting one. Yeah.
I love how you'll be able to repurpose that stained glass too. That is, that can't be easy, taking stained glass out of a building like that and deconstructing, like the amount of time it would take to like, to take a place apart like this is amazing. And what I'm like, you really do have to invest a lot of manpower and, you know, sweat and equity to save all this amazing stuff. Right. So, like, it seems easier just to bring in the backhoe and just knock the building down and, like you said, crush it up and get rid of it. For you guys, how do you guys do like a balance between the cost of taking a building down and then the cost and then being able to resell the products and make a profit in this? It seems like it's a lot of hard work.
It absolutely is. And so we do not do deconstruction.
Okay.
So we just do the salvage side of it. There are companies doing it, and when we're able to, we get as much of the structural material as we can. But yeah, absolutely, as you say, it's like such, in order for us, our shops, to be full of the materials we sell, we focus more on the fixtures of a building. So but when we get into churches, that's where it gets a lot closer to deconstruction, because, like, for instance, there was two other churches just a couple blocks from each other. Each church was about a whole city block up in the university district, and all of the stained glass was, instead of having a wood frame, it was set in stone. And it's just like, it just boggles the mind how people were able to do this. Like, I still don't understand how they are able to basically frame a piece of stained glass in stone. And again, we were out there with those roto hammers, these little mini jackhammers. And so you're like a centimeter from the edge of the stained glass, and you're trying to break away the stone so that you can get, you know, get this whole piece out. And we're just, you know, got a scissor lift out there to, you know, and had to do like relief cuts to kind of, you know, make a little bit of room for the stone to break away from the glass instead of towards the glass. And so, you know, it's a tough one, because there's also not a lot of people that are putting, you know, 12-foot tall crucifix, you know, stained glass in their home or building. I mean, churches are becoming a lot smaller. It's one of these things where we do it because we are passionate about it, and we think this is amazing material that deserves to be saved. At the end of the day, it's actually very challenging to find people that can use these giant pieces of stained glass, but we just also feel like it's our responsibility. If we're the ones salvaging this church, we need to make sure every single piece of that, even if it's not the biggest money maker and it is by far the biggest labor investment, that all that stuff gets saved.
So tell me a little bit about your customers. How are you building your community for your customers, like in the early days, to get people to come and to buy all this great salvaged materials? How do you build community? How do you communicate with your customers? What have you seen grow over time with your customers?
Well, our customers are, it's again, the variety thing that works well for us. We have everyone from the DIY community, the home remodelers, homeowners that are doing their own remodels, to designers, developers that want that, you know, cool piece of, you know, kind of character piece for, you know, they could build a brand new home and put like a mantle made out of beautiful old growth material, so they have some amount of character in these new homes. So it was I think in the beginning it was a lot tougher for Kurt in the early days to be able to do this, because we didn't have social media. Social media has changed everything for us, because now we have so much more reach and we can show people, you know, now that we can do videos and show people what we're doing, people really, I mean, I think it really expands the community of people interested in this stuff by showing them the process and the kind of the weird exposure we get and the interesting places we get into. You know, I always, in all my videos, I'm like, all right, guys, now we're going to the basement, the best part, and, you know, and take people through these old buildings. Because a lot of times that's like kind of the last time eyes are going to be laid on these places. So I think kind of getting people, you know, our shops, we really make beautiful, like I take no credit for that. My staff is absolutely incredible, creative people that make these insanely cool displays. You know, all the stained glass needs to get displayed, and, you know, so that people can see what works for their project. And so there's that aspect of it. And that is, you know, you can just walk around the shop. We're open to the public 7 days a week. And we also have all of our inventory online at our website, so you can see what materials are updated daily. So it's kind of like one of those scroll things where it's just like, you know, a lot of people keep it as a tab open to see, oh, what Earthfly is pulling in today. Maybe it's a kitchen cabinet set from a McMansion, or maybe it's, you know, some crazy old growth beam or some beautiful piece of stained glass. And then, yeah, also bringing people into the actual salvage and showing, you know, also teaching people how to do it. We've gotten a good response to kind of more instructional stuff. Like, hey, if you wanted to, you know, get your old windows, your old sash windows to start working again, here's how you would take them apart. Or, you know, if you're in a situation somewhere else and can't give us a call because we're too far away, here's how you would go about removing that window, so that if you have to demolish or put in new windows, you can save the old one. Someone can put it in a greenhouse or even just turn it into a picture frame.
So, like, you could, in your career and with things that you're passionate about, you could go down a path that be an easier job for you and for your team to do. I'm sure there's a lot of easier things that you guys could come up with than what you're doing. Why is this so important to you? Why is salvage and repurposing and all this, why is it so important?
I never have the same day twice. I mean, there's, you know, I see a lot of folks, my girlfriend works from home, and I think in a lot of ways that's pretty cushy and satisfying. You know, you're in your own space. But for me, I'm just kind of a very active person, and I bore easily. So the level of just interesting things that we get into really keeps us all interested in it. As well as just knowing that we are doing, you know, we're doing a really good public service here. It's not, you know, no one's forcing anyone to salvage homes. So it's really, I kind of have this sense of urgency about it. And maybe that's what helps my drive a lot. Cause like, if we miss a remodel, if we, you know, and it can be a really couple of days can make the difference between everything going in a dumpster, and us being able to insert ourselves in there and get those materials out. So that like kind of, time restriction and, it just brings that level of urgency that, if it goes away, it's gone forever. And you can't really, you know, you can't follow the dumpster to the landfill and start picking through it. That's not going to be economical. So you really need to have a crew there. And you need to find out about these projects with enough time to set everything up. So, I think all of us kind of, it's a real community within Earthwise of us just like, what, there's a building being torn down. Like, all right, drop everything, guys. We're going to spend our day figuring out who's doing this. And we're going to bug the crap out of them until they get us in that building.
You're like environmental medics on call. The alarm goes off. Everybody slides down a pole. Off you go, right? That's kind of what's happening.
I think that's like kind of the cartoon version of it. I think that's perfect. Yep, absolutely.
How do you build relationships with people in the demolition world? I can see you guys being more of a hindrance in the timeline of things. When I want to come in and knock the building down and move on, you guys want time to take boards apart and remove doors and windows. How do you build relationships with people who don't value what you value? How do you kind of build that bridge?
I think our longevity brings a lot to it. You know, if I can tell someone, we're not just like some, you know, guy on Craigslist trying to get your stuff and sell it. We're, you know, we're a business that does this. So we have a lot of really old connections. We have a lot of the development companies we've been working with for many years. And that helps a lot. But there's lots, you know, big development companies will move into the Seattle area. And then it's kind of just, I really think of it as an easy product to sell. You know, that's where we're kind of a salesperson in a sense, where we have to say, hey, listen, here, we have to convince them that it's a good idea to salvage. And so that's usually the first thing I tell them is like, we are a completely free service for you. We're going to remove materials that you would otherwise be paying to throw away and we're absolutely going to work on your schedule, because you're absolutely right. Like, they don't really care that much. If I can, you know, we typically try to pay for the materials that we're salvaging as you know, at the percentage we can to still keep ourselves afloat. But that's usually a, you know, drop in the bucket from what these giant projects cost. So it's really convincing them that this is the right thing to do. Your clients are going to appreciate it. And you're, it's just a really good look too. If you're going to be tearing down an old building, you look really good in the public's eyes if you take the time to salvage it. And I do have to say, even though I said there's no one making them do it, there is some incentives from the city of Seattle in particular has been really good. They put in place a salvage assessment form where if you are applying for a demo permit, you have to have a salvage company come out and assess if materials can be salvaged or not. There's not a lot of teeth in it, but it's still really great because it just, it's like people are like, wait, salvage? What's that? Like a lot of, and then a lot of people just, you know, we don't have to do a lot of convincing. They're like, oh, you guys want to, you know, I felt bad that I was going to have to demolish this whole building. I'm really glad you guys can take some stuff from it. Please take as much as you can. Or it's like, hey, you know, I'm going to do your salvage assessment form, but make sure you give us a call a couple weeks beforehand. And then we set a lot of reminders to when it seems like someone is in a real rush to demo something, we make sure that we are, you know, essentially pestering them to get us in there and stay within their timeline. Like, hey, I need 2 days to do this. And having really efficient crews makes that possible. And once we've worked with someone once or twice, we're shoo-in. We try to be really easy to work with, and we, you know, we get in, we get out, we show up when we say we're going to show up and do what we say we're going to do. And in the construction world, that is just not a given, and it's usually really appreciated. So just kind of having some integrity with how we run our jobs and making sure we're just always accountable and, you know, doing exactly what we say we're going to do. And they call us back every time once we get in the door with them.
That's, I love that. I was talking earlier that our community isn't huge in the salvage and repurposing and all that. We have Upcycle Canada. People think we're a bicycle store or a spin class, right? They're like, what is an upcycle? I have no idea what you're talking about. So like, we feel like we're like pulling people up a hill towards something better. For you, is there somebody that inspires you that when you're looking at what you do and you're like, wow, this other company, this other person or whatever inspires you every day? Is there someone like that?
Well, I certainly think my mentor, Kurt, really inspires me just to think about how hard it was when he started doing it. You know, he was doing all this and building it from nothing, you know, and he was a single dad at the time, too. It's just it kind of blows my mind that he was able to do that, because I have so many more tools at my disposal now. So he's certainly, you know, an inspiration to me. And then there's some companies right now. There's kind of a push, and this may not be something that would be on your radar, but there's a deconstruction ordinance in Portland, Oregon. And so that means like every house over 100 years old has to be deconstructed. So it's kind of this movement in that direction where you do it all by hand, every single board gets saved. And the guy, the other kind of inspiration to me would be the guy that that came up with the urban forestry idea. He's so cool. And he started a company. I'll just give a shout out to them. They're called Sledge Seattle. They're really cool. And they, you know, rather than he kind of saw this coming down the pipeline that there's going to be a lot of deconstruction going on. And so he said, you know, I'm not going to wait around for the government to decide what they're going to do. I'm just going to see if I can make this a profitable business. And he's been an Earthwise customer for, I don't know, like since the beginning, basically. And he used to build houses. He would have us out to salvage. And then he always loved to take store credit from us. And he'd come, you know, pick through our cool stuff, put that in his new builds. And so the thing that he's been able to do, which I just think is so impressive, is be able to deconstruct a house and then use those materials to build a new house. And that's always the biggest problem is, you know, it's like storing those materials and finding a, you know, moving them to somewhere you can store them, having them the right cuts and everything so that then you can build something with them. Yeah. So he invented this whole, but he started building like DADUs or detached accessory dwelling units so that people can put, you know, it's like this whole Airbnb phenomenon and people are putting little cottages in their backyard that they can rent out to people. And so he started building those out of salvage materials. And it's just what he's been able to do with it is incredible because people have tried and failed in the past to make deconstruction a profitable thing. But he has succeeded in doing that. So he's kind of an inspiration to me as well.
That's great. And even way back in the day, like, because like in the 1800s and stuff, people would take a barn and turn it into a house and they would take it apart and move it over there and reassemble it in a different form and recreate something and salvage what they had because they had it, right? So it wasn't a matter of just go cut down a new tree. It was even way back then, it wasn't called salvaging in a sense. It was just, that's just how things were done. And I think that's one thing we've maybe lost in all the busyness and the, I don't know, maybe some of the boring construction we do today where everything looks the same, is that beautiful attention to detail. And you're uncovering stuff that was never really meant to be seen again. When the person created this building, they put that window in there in the rock and they never thought of anybody taking it out, you know, and here you guys come along behind them. The craftsmanship of the people back in the day and how they did what they did without the tools that we have today, I'm amazed.
It blows my mind as well. I mean, we will see time because we kind of like the CSI houses when we're like in a really old house. We're like, okay, you know, it looks like there's a weird cavern. You know, there's a void here in the wall. Like, what if we, you know, break into that and see? Or, you know, a lot of times we'll find like old pocket doors where instead of getting rid of the pocket doors, they just sealed them in the wall. So you always, if the threshold looks a little too wide, you're like, oh, there might be a pocket door hidden there. And one story that I thought was interesting is Kurt, he went to a job site and was, saw some kind of a void, opened it up, and then there was some kind of scratch on the wall that said, "Hello, demo guy." It was clearly just somebody like trying to kind of, I've seen it like less interesting. This was an old house. So that was like, you know, that person knew that they were the next person that's going to see this message is someone who's going to be demolishing the house. Cause otherwise you have no business being here.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of interesting. And, I want to add one more to my inspiration list that that's really cool and has been happening forever is, I think they're called Nickel Brothers and they move houses and they go to insane lengths to move really old houses. It's like this weird deal where they'll, you know, if you ever see something, it's like a house for a dollar, all you have to do is pay to move it for $300,000, but they will do this, and you have to have a place to put it. But, there is nothing greener than moving a house. Like, as far as just not, you don't have to do anything. You set it down on a new foundation. I bet that a lot of times solves a lot of any foundational problems of the old house. And it's just like, they are just technicians, like just unbelievably skilled in, they'll work with the arborists in the city to, trim back this tree a little bit so we can move this, giant old house through the city somewhere else for it to get set down. So that's another thing that I just find absolutely fascinating from a logistical and just that it's like the greenest thing I could possibly imagine. It's just moving a house to a new location.
So, okay, Aaron, we're going to be ending up in a couple minutes here. How do people find you guys? How do they connect with you? How do they see what you guys have to offer? What's the best way for them to connect with you guys?
Sure. We're everywhere. So ewsalvage.com is our website. That's where you can find all of our inventory and stuff. I suggest people keep an eye on that because in not too distant future, there's going to be some developments on that that I'll that will be apparent once it's up. Currently, though, it is functioning and has our inventory on there. We're just talking about hopefully being able to do some shipping in the future. Yep, all the social medias, Earthwise Salvage is how you can find us, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest. We try to put ourselves in front of as many eyes as possible. So we are just all over social media.
Do you do a lot of podcasts?
You're my second, actually. I just did my first one like 2 weeks ago. So yeah, it's been a wild roller coaster getting on the salvage circuit. The podcast salvage circuit here.
Awesome.
So yeah, no, I don't do a lot of them, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah,
it's a great way to talk to people that are just as geeked out about this stuff as I am.
Oh gosh, you got me.
Sometimes it's not always easy to find.
You got me for sure. Like I said at the beginning, we're at the beginning stages of this. You guys are such an inspiration for us. We've been following you guys and checking out your stuff, and the fact that you have time out of a busy day with phones ringing and things going on, I know you're busy, and I really truly do appreciate you taking time for us. Before we close off, Aaron, what would you say to somebody who's on the fence? They're not really sure if salvaging and repurposing is important. What would you tell them to push them into our camp? Why is this so important?
Oh, it's a no-brainer from so many perspectives. But the big thing that I think just really is the most important part to me is every time you save something, it's kind of a double plus for the environment, because if you save an old door, that's one more new door that doesn't have to be made from virgin materials. So it doesn't have these giant supply chains, with it, these carbon intensive supply chains behind it where they're produced in some other country. There's just so much green value to reusing something, as well as just the quality is unmistakably better if it's made out of these, especially when it comes to wood, old growth materials. So that would be what I would tell them. I'd tell them a lot more than that. They wouldn't be able to get me to shut up about it. But that would be my just real quick one for them.
So as you go through your day, Aaron, today, and as you talk to your customers and to your staff, your amazing people you have working there, can you please tell them thank you from Dave and Jen out here in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, that you guys are doing something amazing for this environment and for your community, and you've inspired us, and I'm hoping that there are listeners around the world will be inspired to reach out and to thank you as well for all the great things you guys are doing. Please just let your team know that their efforts are beyond their geographical area of where you guys are right now, and that there's more people with eyes on you, watching and cheering you on, even from Ontario, Canada. So thank you so much.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And thanks so much to you for everything you guys do and just getting the word out there.
Excellent. Everyone, please go to the website, check out all the links in the show notes, give them all the likes and love and shares that you can. And we're watching with great anticipation for what's to come. Thank you so much, Aaron.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, thanks for checking out the podcast. Thanks for listening to the interview with Aaron. And I hope that you will do what we've asked and go check out all their great stuff on social media, their website, TikTok, all that great stuff. And follow along. If you're curious about architectural salvage, here you go. Like, how better can we present somebody? Aaron did a great job. Would love for you to go over to our website, upcyclecanada.ca. You'll see all of the things Upcycle Canada related. You will see all the great things that are happening in our world, and we thank you for being part of it. If you've listened this far, you are our super fans. Thank you. And we realize and appreciate that anyone that listens this far in the podcast is part of our community, and we can just, don't worry about the other people who listen, but you right now are the ones that have stuck with us and continue to support us. Thank you so much for doing so. I would love to hear your voice on our podcast, upcyclecanada.ca. Go over there, the little microphone icon, click it, and you can leave a voicemail for us. We will include you in the podcast. So we would love to hear from you wherever you are in the world, wherever you're listening. And love to get your feedback. Just let us know who you are, where you're listening from, favorite episode, whatever you want to say. Head over to upcyclecanada.ca, click the button, and we'd love to hear from you. Thank you for being part of our community. And again, on behalf of Jen and Paige, thank you so much for supporting Upcycle Canada as we continue to grow and save the next piece from the landfill. And you're part of the solution. Do your best this week to save one thing from the landfill. What can you save? Try it. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being part of the community. Cheers.
This has been the Upcycle Canada podcast. Thanks for listening today. We appreciate your feedback and would love to connect with you. Email your questions, comments, or suggestions to upcyclecanadapodcast@gmail.com. To find out more about our business and access links to all our social media sites, podcast notes, and more, please visit upcyclecanada.ca. A review of this episode on the podcast app of your choice is always appreciated. Please help us build this community by sharing our podcast with your family and friends. Our thanks to Jacob Moon for the instrumental backing track used in this podcast. Please visit jacobmoon.com for more on this talented Canadian artist. Join us again for more great topics, ideas, and practical steps to help you in your daily life. Thank you for listening. Let's keep this conversation going.
Hey, this is Dave. You're like, what's this music? I thought the podcast was over. Well, it is. This is actually an ad. Oh, you're like an ad. But this is different. This is for another podcast called, ready? Dad Space. Dad Space is a podcast created for dads by dads. Head over to dadspace.ca for all the information. And we would love if you know a dad, if you are a dad, if you've ever had a dad, if you know a new dad, a current dad, an empty nest dad, we have a podcast just for dads. And I'd love to share it with you and to share it with a special dad in your life, dadspace.ca. Thank you for listening to the podcast you've already been listening to. But if you want a little bit more podcasting greatness, check out dadspace.ca, dadspace.ca, for all the goodness for your favorite dad. Aww. It's like a Father's Day present every day. We'll see you over at dadspace.ca. Thanks for listening to all of our podcasts, and we'll talk soon. This is Dave, and I'll meet you at dadspace.ca. Cheers. And now we dance.